Mildred checked her Remington long blaster. The bayonet at the end glistened like a polished mirror, and she suddenly went cold, realizing that could easily give away their position.
Be nice if Gaza arrives and we could trick him into fighting the droid for us.
She set the stock on the floor and pulled out a butane lighter. Lighting a candle, she played the flame along the edge of the blade until it was a dull black. Satisfied, she tucked away the other items into her satchel and shouldered the weapon.
Ready.
Nodding in reply, Ryan slipped out the broken window on the opposite side of the office building from where the sec hunter had been seen. He had been going to mention that to the healer, but it was better that she caught it herself. When they first found Mildred, she had been useless aside from her medical skills. She'd been born and raised in a world where the biggest danger was overeating and boredom, but she had learned fast. As they walked along the sidewalk, the friends could see salt dust everywhere, coating vehicles and corpses like snow. The tallest buildings blocked the sun, casting deep shadows across the rest of the city, brilliant slashes of light showing between the high-rises. Ryan could guess that it would be pitch black at the base of the cliff until high noon. That would be a good place to hide during the afternoon, and he filed that thought away. Right now, he had to stay razor. The streets were empty of traffic in the middle of the blocks, but packed solid at every intersection. The inhabitants of the city were everywhere, sitting hunched behind the steering wheels, sprawled on the sidewalk, holding packages and briefcases. Ryan saw that some poor bastard was lying on top of an awning covering a greengrocer stand, the vegetables long turned into shriveled, inedible lumps. Christy hitched her heavy blaster.
Must have fallen from a window.
Makes sense.
Dean strung his crossbow as he walked. The silent weapon might catch a droid by surprise, and the cold iron coral in his quiver would pack a lot more penetration punch than a soft lead 9mm slug. As the group passed through a collection of crashed vehicles, Mildred gave a soft cry as she spotted an ambulance. Rushing to the rear doors, she found them locked, then cursed in remembrance that they were always locked to keep thieves from looting the medical supplies. Rushing around, she checked the driver's side door and then the passenger's, but the ambulance was sealed tight, the EMTs inside still wearing their seatbelts and grinning at her from across the ages. JB tested one of the locks briefly.
Good ones. Sorry, Millie. We'd need to blow them open, and that would give away our position to the droid.
The physician peered through the salted windows at the equipment cabinets in the rear. The supplies in there were priceless, irreplaceable. To be denied the tools of her trade by the thickness of a sheet of glass was intolerable. But Mildred turned her back to the treasure trove of healing supplies and strode away, trying not to cry from sheer frustration. Stopping at a phone booth, Ryan picked up the telephone book, but it crumbled into dust at his touch. He'd expected that, but hoped it might last long enough to give them the address of a supermarket or a mall. A hissing sounded from an alleyway, and the companions spun about with their blasters ready. Then they saw a limousine slowly tilting as its 100-year-old tires finally expired under the onslaught of fresh air.
No rats, no muties, no looters. If it wasn't for the core hot for our blood, I'd say we take the place as a home. It'd be very hard for anybody to invade from the cliff.
We could make a hell of a Vill wall with all these dead cars. Remember the Vill defenses at Zero City?
Not really.
Cradling the Winchester in his good hand, Jack bumped the boy with a hip.
Cause not, she near dead whole time.
Dean shrugged. He had survived, that was what mattered. Just then, the call of a bird echoing among the tall buildings made the companions glance upward with weapons at the ready, but there was nothing in sight. Then a puff of smoke appeared over a concrete parking garage.
With the salt dome covering the sky last time, the fires ran out of oxygen and died quickly. That's why there's anything here at all.
Not happened this time, by and all.
Ryan halted at a corner of a bank, the dead teller leaning against the bulletproof glass and staring down at them. Using a plastic mirror from a pocket, he checked the next street to make sure it was clear, then swept around to continue the wreck. This road was wider than the rest, more a boulevard, and every store seemed to have a colorful awning and huge windows, the powdery salt mixed with the glistening glass shards. Shuffling his boots to keep from stepping on the glass and shattering a piece with every step, Ryan swept the store with his eye, then paused and gave a low whistle. The companions hurried into view and saw the man going across the traffic-filled street to a dark supermarket, its windowless front gaping wide. Spreading out to avoid giving any hidden watchers a group target, the companions converged on the store and slipped inside, with Doc and Jack staying at the front as a rear guard. Inside, the dead were everywhere, lying in disorganized lines at the registers, sprawled on top of gnarled fruit filling a bin, supine before an ATM, with slips of paper and cash clutched in their gnarled fists. Ryan checked his rat counter.
Clear. Only background rats. The place was never hot-nuked. Must have been a neutron bomb.
Dean remembered hearing about those. Some sort of fancy nuke that only chilled people, not buildings.
I hope they were all slain instantly. Otherwise, any survivors would have been buried alive in perpetual darkness, sans air and hope.
Sadly, Christy shook her head.
Ugh, such a waste.
Going to an end cap display of fruit juice, she inspected the top can, only to replace it with a disgusted expression as she wiped a hand clean on her thigh.
Rusted through.
Don't take anything with any rusty spots. The salt would eat through the galvanized tin easily. Stick with glass and plastic if possible.
Spreading out in a standard search pattern, the companions walked along the deathly silent aisles, stepping over the desiccated bodies when they could, which wasn't often. Soon their boots were coated with a gray dust, and the air began to have a strangely appetizing aroma that was almost meaty.
Odd. It's sort of like beef jerky. Son of a bitch, we're breathing long pig.
Christy recoiled at that. Long pig, the canny term for human flesh. Ryan prodded a display of plastic bags with the barrel of his blaster.
Just deaders rotting.
Mildred pulled out a handkerchief.
Better put on your masks. There could be microbes in this dust that'll make us ill.
The unspoken word of plague seemed to thunder in their midst, and the companions quickly tied cloths over their faces. At the sight, Mildred felt her mood oddly brighten as she thought about how the security guards from 100 years ago would have had a heart attack at so many heavily armed people wearing masks invading their store. JB cocked an eyebrow.
Something funny?
Tell you later, John.
She smiled with her eyes. The earlier depression was gone. The past was past, and she was still alive. Mildred had true friends and a man who deeply loved her. There really wasn't anything more important in life than that. Playing her flashlight on the ceiling signs, Mildred found the soda pop aisle and led the rest that way. It was dim between the tall racks, but the candles helped, and she could read the colorful labels of assorted soft drinks. The names brought memories of ridiculous television commercials, and the physician found herself humming jingles that hadn't been played for a century. Ryan lifted a shiny container that audibly sloshed.
This brand seems to be the best. Glass bottles, good and tight.
It was only half full, but the fluid inside was crystal clear, with no clouding to mark contamination. He cracked the plastic film around the cap with a simple twist, but sniffed the water first, then poured some into a palm before touching it with his tongue.
Oh, nuking hell, that's good.
He sighed thankfully, then took a long drink and ended finishing off the entire container.
Fire blast, I needed that. Everybody, fill your canteens, drink your fill, and then put a dozen into your backpacks.
Dean placed a case of beef stew on the floor.
We could load up a truck from outside, take everything we can.
Those wags are aced, though.
JB poured a bottle of water over his head, then paused as it seeped into his dusty clothing.
This isn't a mill base or a redoubt. Nothing out there has a nuke battery or condensed fuel. The power is gone, the tanks are dry, and the engine has seized tight from the grease dried solid as iron over the years.
Leaving the others to their work, Mildred proceeded deeper into the market, the reflected shine of her flashlight moving about here and there. After a few minutes, she returned, her satchel bag bulging with items.
Oh, there was a pharmacy! Alcohol, white thread for sutures, powdered sulfur for wounds, bandages, aspirins, antibiotics! I found 1,000 things we need!
Can you carry 1,000 things?
As the beam started to wane, Mildred pumped the handle of her flashlight to recharge the weakening batteries.
No, Dean, I can't. But even these few items will help us stay alive. My next batch of jump juice may actually do the trick.
If we can get out of this pit alive...
Ryan poured a full bottle of water over his head and brushed back his soaked hair. It had been several weeks since they found a redoubt with a working shower, and he could almost taste the stink of his clothing. Fully loaded, the group took a detour through the canned goods aisle and found a dozen cans of soup and beef stew in acceptable condition. Privately, they each knew there was probably a lot of beef jerky in the snack aisle, but by unspoken agreement, they didn't go there. The meaty smell in the air of the store had killed any appetite for that staple for a long time. Going to the front of the store, Ryan sent Doc and Jack back to fill up with water, but Mildred stopped the teenager.
First, I fix that arm properly. Off with the shirt.
Removing his heavy jacket, Jack nodded in acceptance and eased off his bloody shirt, the material sticking to him in several spots. In spite of her earlier work, Mildred was unhappy with the condition of the wound. The teenager had been using the arm, and the stitching had come loose. Fresh blood was seeping into the sandy bandages, and the wound was slightly red from infection. Damnation. And the dirty air of the store was only going to make that worse. Quickly, she checked his upper arms for any striation indicating blood poisoning, but thankfully there was none. Satisfied, she cleaned the wound with sterile water sold for contact lenses, then sewed it shut with actual sutures, and washed it clean with pure alcohol. Drinking a bottle of mineral water, the teenager flinched at the contact, but never said a word. Packing the wound with greasy antibiotics, Mildred tied off a military-style field dressing and hung it over his neck once more. The antibiotics would be incredibly weak if there was any life in them at all, but it was the best she had. Jack flexed the arm and bunched the muscles.
Hey, not itch. Feels good.
I used some hydrocortisone.
Good stuff. Got more?
Two full tubes.
Suddenly, a light fixture dropped from the ceiling to hit the terrazzo floor in a loud crash. As the companions turned, another object fell from a hole in the roof and hit with a metallic clang.
Droid!
Smashing aside a display rack, the Sec Hunter droid came charging out of the darkness with spinning buzzsaws attached to the ends of both feral arms.